welcome back to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. We're talking this morning about the Lakers. That's our big topic of discussion. They obviously had held training camp last week in a media zoo that I have honestly never seen before, just from looking at the pictures and seeing video. I've seen some circus events in the NBA, but what we were seeing out of the Lakers camp was a whole thing altogether. CBSSports.com senior writer Ken Berger was actually in attendance for Lakers camp last week, did several great columns off of what's going on out there. There'll be more of that this week that you can check out on CBSSports.com. Ken, let's start with kind of the overall impression of that circus. Just from a media standpoint, have you seen anything like that before?
Well, you know, it was pretty big, and luckily, and I did this on purpose, I did not go to their media day, which I knew was just going to be a fiasco, and you could tell from the photos of, you know, 50 deep around Dwight and in the interview scrum and all that stuff. It really was a circus. You know, it's probably in terms of, you know, that amount of interest and attendance by the media and just the buzz around it, you know, probably on a par with or even more than, you know, when Miami came together a couple of years ago. But they kind of, you know, the Heat kind of, you know, they went off and did their own thing on, you know, on an Air Force base or what and whatnot. And it was much, that kind of dampened things a little bit, but this was right in the Lakers practice facility with all the banners, you know, hanging in the background. And, you know, it kind of set the tone for the week, which, you know, as the week went on, it became sort of more of a normal Laker experience, which is, you know, even a normal Laker experience is heightened compared to what you find elsewhere in the league. But definitely a lot of buzz and a lot of interest. And this is, you know, clearly it signaled to everyone that, you know, however this turns out, it's going to be the story of the NBA this year.
You know, when the Heat got together with the triad down there in Miami in 2010, they had kind of a whole, their training camp was largely almost a celebration. I mean, they really treated it like they had won everything as soon as they got together. My favorite quote from that entire experience was Wade saying, "The hard part's over," which that just to me encapsulates their entire attitude that first year. With the Lakers, was it more of a celebratory tone, or was there a very, I've heard from some people that it was kind of business-like just because of the veterans and the experience that they have. Was it more of a serious camp, or was it more of a joyous kind of look how great this is going to be?
No, I think in terms of the portions of practice that we were allowed to watch, and it was more than usual. They actually let us in there for the last 15, 20 minutes, and they were actually running dummy drills, you know, working through the new aspects of the offense they're installing, the Princeton offense. And I would definitely say it was businesslike. I mean, you know, on one hand, you know, there was a seriousness because they're installing a new system, and it's different than anything that they've done in the past there. It's different than anything that Steve Nash has done in the past in his career. And, you know, Dwight, I think, you know, coming off the back surgery and trying to get his conditioning back and get himself comfortable, I think, you know, there was a certain seriousness to everything. But, you know, definitely was not celebratory, but there, you know, there was a distinct feeling of camaraderie. And, you know, you kind of got the feeling, even though it was the very first steps of this Lakers team, of this group together, you didn't see any of the sideshows and the subplots that, you know, some of us have predicted that, you know, there was going to be, you know, the conflict of egos and how were Kobe and Dwight going to get along. You know, there was really none of that. And, you know, everyone seems to be on the same page. Everyone seems to recognize that, you know, there's a lot of work to be done here, that this isn't just, you know, you don't just throw all this talent together and, you know, put them out on the floor and watch it go. There's a certain amount of work that goes into this. And I think that, you know, that tone is set by Kobe. I think, you know, certainly everyone understands the point that he's at in his career and the sense of urgency to get that sixth title. And I think a certain amount of that comes from Coach Mike Brown. I think he, you know, he's coached talented teams before. He coached LeBron in Cleveland. He's dealt with expectations, but never anything on the scale of what he's facing now. So I think, you know, from all directions, there's a serious tone and an understanding that this is not just going to all, you know, come together like some kind of witch's brew and you just kind of, you know, serve it. You know, it's got to be, you know, the work's got to be put in first. And I think everyone there is veteran enough and experienced enough to understand that.
It's been funny to me because, you know, obviously the questions, how they're going to fit together, which are pretty natural, normal questions, and how Brian's going to adapt, you know, to playing off ball. And, of course, there's this reaction, this is pretty typical of the Lakers and the league in general, really, to say, oh, that's so silly, why would you guys talk about that, when this has historically been one of the most really drama-filled teams in the league. Every single year, there's some huge story going on with them. A lot of it, you know, ends up coming up, you know, behind closed doors and stuff like that. You know, do you get the sense at all that are they right that a lot of this is overblown and they're going to be able to work through this stuff because they're professionals and they'll get through it? Or, you know, is ego something that's a legitimate thing that we should be concerned about in terms of how this is going to play out? Because there are some, you know, Nash is a guy that's going to defer, and we know that, and he's never been a guy that really hogs the spotlight. But there are some egos on that team, and it's not just Bryant and Howard. I mean, we're talking about Gasol, who has a strong opinion of his own abilities and is a great player. And Meta World Peace is already getting – you can already tell he's a little bit like, why does everyone act like I'm Ringo? You know, so is this a legitimate concern about the egos in play, or do you think that because of the experience, they're going to be able to just push through all that?
Well, I think there's two parts of it. There's ego and star power that, you know, you always have, there's always an adjustment period when you bring high-level stars together in the NBA. The other part of it that's perfectly legitimate to wonder about is the fit. You know, is this going to be a good fit? I mean, you can have all the talent in the world, and, you know, as we learned with Miami in their first year together, you know, as close as they came, they still didn't win. And when you have that much star power and that much talent, you know, getting to the finals is not enough, and getting to the finals is never enough for the Lakers, no matter, you know, what kind of talent they have. So I think those expectations do kind of hang over this team, and I think, you know, they are possibly, you know, uniquely qualified to handle it, because unlike, you know, the Heat, who kind of, you know, as you pointed out, didn't really for some reason grasp what they had done by coming together and the kind of spotlight and bullseye they put on themselves, the Lakers really do understand that, because they always have that spotlight and that bullseye on them. So, you know, I think, you know, how Dwight responds to that, I think, is going to be the most interesting thing, because he's always been in the spotlight personally, but he's never really had, you know, the level of expectation and the demand to win. There's been a desire to win, and, you know, when he was in Orlando, it would have been nice for them to win a championship, but it was never, you know, demanded or expected, and then the eyes of the league were never really on that team. You know, they're as good as they were, and when they went to the finals, you know, the eyes of the league were on, you know, the Lakers and Celtics more so than Orlando. So I think that's legitimate, and certainly will play out over the next few months. And the fit, you know, is this a fit for Kobe? And I think at this point in his career, to be off the ball a little bit more will help him, will save him for the playoffs, and won't force him to play 38, 39 minutes a night like he did last year. But even more so than Kobe, I think the question of fit really pertains to Nash, because his entire career has been built on dominating the ball and having it in his hands. And he's not going to do that necessarily in this offense with the Princeton, you know, principles that they're installing. I mean, he's going to be setting as many screens off the ball as he is going to be, you know, working off screens as the ball handler. And that's just not been how he's played his entire career. So I think, you know, any and all of these things are certainly legitimate. I think, you know, because you have veterans involved and because you have people involved that understand what it's like to be a Laker, I think, you know, you give them a little benefit of the doubt. But I think, you know, the technical fit with Nash and the ego fit with Howard, I think, are the two biggest questions.
You know, you're talking about the Princeton offense, and Mike Brown has brought in a whole slew of new assistants. I know that Quinn Snyder, who was on the staff last year, is now coaching for CSKA in Moscow. You know, Brown came in last year in the lockout season, and he had to try and install a whole new offense for a team that had run the same thing for years and years and years. You know, they're getting to know him, he's getting to know them. There's so much instability. Now there's even more stuff in flux because you've got, obviously, Howard and Nash come in along with a whole new bench, essentially. There's so much change on the team in terms of personnel. Do you feel like bringing in the elements that he's doing on the coaching staff, is that part of that process? Does he feel like it's part of that process? Or is there a concern that there might be a little bit too much instability with everything trying to get this, all this new stuff trying to get, basically acclimated inside of a month?
Well, I think the changes on the coaching staff, specifically Eddie Jordan being brought in to install the Princeton, that was an idea that Mike Brown, kind of formulated as this team came together as to what would be the best direction to go offensively. Last year clearly was not the right direction for them. They got away from the triangle, which is something they've been successful with for a long time, and that's an offense where, you're reading and reacting to the defense, and the players are given the freedom within a foundation of how you play to make the right play. And I think the Lakers really thrived under that, and then when they went to a more structured, more set play oriented approach, they struggled. So I think from that standpoint, even though the Princeton is different than the triangle, I think the concepts are a good fit, and allowing veteran players like Kobe and Nash and Gasol, who are all very good off ball players and passers when they have the ball, I think that is the right direction for them to go. And I think Kobe was very much on board with it for that reason. He wanted to, if they're not going to go back to playing the triangle, I think he's extremely excited about going back to a system that allows more freedom. And I've always liked teams that play that way. That's why I've always been a big fan of the way Mike D'Antoni plays. And in New York here, I was in the minority on that, because I just like when teams, when coaches don't micromanage and get up off the bench and call a play every time down the floor. When you run the triangle or you run the Princeton, you have certain principles and you just run it. And the players and their talent and their decision-making and their comfort level with one another are what makes it work. And I think from that standpoint, that's why I like it. But it is a lot of change. And, with change is going to come some growing pains, and it's not all going to work as soon as you unwrap it. You're going to have to unwrap it and kind of assemble it and maybe make some mistakes along the way. But I think, ultimately, I think it's the right way for this team to play.
Yeah, and I think trusting those guys to make decisions, that's I don't think you can go wrong with trusting Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash, and even Dwight Howard to make the right play, and Pau Gasol as well. I think that's definitely going to be something that works out well for them. That's Ken Berger, senior writer for CBSSports.com, writes for the NBA. You need to be following him on Twitter at KBergCBS. You can catch his work, throughout the week, and Ken's the guy that I work with the most, and it's always a pleasure. Ken, thanks so much for your time.
All right, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
The Lakers, they've been a team that's been wrapped in so much drama over the last couple of years, and not just, the usual stuff with Hollywood and all that, and obviously they win so much, and that's what draws a lot of attention for them, is they're just a winning team. But, with the Lamar Odom trade and that whole situation, and, even with the reality TV shows, and with Meta World Peace, and, the elbow to James Harden, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a season that goes by without some sort of, really big drama going around. And even going back to, 2007, when Kobe Bryant was, demanding a trade, or threatening a trade, or however you want to interpret the story, they've always been kind of, wrapped in a lot of drama. I want to get kind of the sense of how this compares to those other seasons, dealing with even going back to Shaq and Kobe and all that nonsense. What's it like this year compared to other years, and how are players different? How is this new Lakers crew seeming early on to be different, and what's the approach like? So I wanted to bring in Mark Medina, the Los Angeles Times, to talk a little bit about kind of the culture of the Lakers, what's going on, and also to talk a little bit about age and how much having the kind of, the star power that they're going to have is not only going to help when they're playing together, but might give them an opportunity to rest some of those players whose bodies are going to need it, especially in those later months in March and April.
Joining me now on the CBSSports.com basketball podcast is Mark Medina of the Los Angeles Times, terrific writer out there. There's a lot of great guys that cover the Lakers, but Mark does an exceptional job for the Times. He's got an article out this week talking about Kobe Bryant's comments. We blogged about him on Eye on Basketball, about how the Lakers are still his team, and kind of Kobe having some fun with it. It's a great look inside not only you know, what Lakers camp is like and where Bryant's coming from, but kind of the mind games that go on between Bryant and the media. So, Mark, I mean, let's start there. Before we get into kind of how camp is, you know, Bryant talks about how he goes out and makes a comment that it's his team, no question. And you've got a quote in there about how he's got five rings. You know, why would there be any sort of question? My thought when I read the first quote earlier this week was that, you know, Bryant is smart enough to know what the reaction is going to be. You know, he acts surprised when the media responds to the comments like this, but he knows that we're going to take things where he says that it's his team on a team with Steve Nash and Dwight Howard and Pau Gasol, you know, and they've got so much talent. He knows that there's going to be a reaction to that, you know, and to me it feels like he's trying to go ahead and set a tone because he is, you know, he's made it clear that he has preferences in terms of, you know, he strongly feels that he comes first in a lot of situations. You made the argument kind of that it's not going to necessarily impact how it plays on the floor. And that was also kind of my takeaway, is that this can be his team without necessarily it being, you know, he's always going to have the ball, always going to be shooting. He can be the leader for this team without necessarily having, you know, if we're talking stats, the usage rate that he's had in previous years. Do you kind of get that feeling?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what was interesting is all the players that we talked to, Steve Nash, Pau Gasol, and Dwight Howard, even Kobe, I mean, they don't think it's a non-issue. In fairness to us, I don't think any of us in the media really thought this is a huge deal. I mean, the wording and tone that we were asking these players is, you know, we know, you know, this is said and we talk about this, but are there any practical implications? And I think, you know, everyone isn't questioning whether this is Kobe's team or not. I mean, Steve Nash was kind of joking that it's not like we're in the locker room reminding everyone, okay, remember, this is Kobe Bryant's team, you know, as if they're all in elementary school or middle school. But, you know, Bryant kind of hit the nail on the head of what you said. He wanted to get this conversation out there to almost put it to bed, because he noted how, you know, 2 years ago with Miami when LeBron James joined, there's always that debate of, you know, whose team is it? And LeBron and Dwayne Wade kind of were, you know, treating as if, you know, they're walking on eggshells and trying to be diplomatic to each other. And so in a way, he went out and was bold with this by just wanting to put, you know, that possible storyline to bed. And, you know, I don't think as far as that goes, anyone's questioning that. They know it's Kobe's team. His experience and his championship, you know, resume speaks for itself. I think what's going to matter more is how it all plays out on the floor. And you know what? It could be a good thing because, you know, he has shown signs that he's willing to kind of take a less is more approach. You know, he talked about how Steve Nash is going to, you know, relieve some of the ball handling duties and, you know, going back to his Olympic experience this past summer. You know, he sounded more in tune with wanting to not have to carry the burden. But in reality, it really doesn't matter what they say right now. What matters is what happens on the floor. In my experience covering the Lakers the past 2 years is they're always good at saying the right thing and being very intelligent and articulate about it. But it has a mixed track record on how that exactly translates on the floor.
Yeah, that's always been something that's kind of been interesting to me, is that there's kind of this feeling of, oh, you guys make such a big deal about this, and we get along fine. I don't understand why y'all got to make a big deal about everything. And yet this is the most dramatic team every single year. I mean, you know, it's great for guys like me that are constantly getting to write and provide opinion and analysis off of everything that they say. But, I mean, it's one of those things where people talk about, well, it's just because of the market. And I'm like, no, like, you know, Andre Iguodala isn't saying this kind of stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, the guys in Milwaukee aren't spouting off the same kind of way. Yeah, the media, you know, market intensifies it. But this has legitimately been a pretty dramatic organization from, you know, Lamar and you know, Bynum and that situation and everything. That, you know, they've always kind of had this. And now they've got Dwight Howard. It's hard to see, you know, there being a decrease in drama. My thought is maybe that Steve Nash is going to help with that, though, because it feels like Nash is going to be able to strike the perfect kind of balance of, you know, doing the things that they need, which is, you know, creating plays and creating open looks for Bryant, which he's never really had, and still being able to not take such a role as to threaten anybody's star power. I mean, everyone talks about Howard being the biggest impact, but in terms of making this team click, isn't Nash probably going to be the biggest impact there?
I think so. I mean, I actually talked to James Worthy a few weeks ago, and he said that he is going to pretty much be the engine that drives the Lakers, because he's the one who's going to be running the offense. So he's going to be the one who's going to determine, okay, do I pass to the open man or do I pass it to the person who's demanding the ball more? And his resume suggests that he will pass to the open man. And Steve, when he was kind of laughing about this whole debate of, oh, it's Kobe's team, he did, acknowledge that, look, there's a lot of personalities on the team. We have to get the chemistry down, and that could be an adjustment. But I think that, to the Lakers' credit, they're all coming in with the mindset that they're genuinely want to make this work and they want to make the sacrifices. You know, obviously players like Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, they're on the tail end of their career where they know, the clock for getting more championships, in this case Steve's first, is dwindling. Dwight Howard's trying to, obviously rehab his reputation from his hastily arranged exit from Orlando, and then Meta World Peace is, even though he's joking that, if they don't win, put the blame squarely on him, he doesn't want to be seen as the weak link, and, he's taken great pains to show up in shape this season. So I think everyone is coming to the right place and showing a genuine effort. But that being said, I think that there's still going to be at least a little bit of adjustment period to open the season because it is new parts. And, with that comes just trying to get a feel for one another.
Let's talk a little bit about the camp atmosphere. On media day, I was looking at the photos and I was blown away because I've seen, I've covered the NBA finals. I've covered NBA All-Star games. I've been to these events. I've seen the kind of frenzy that occurs, and I've never seen anything like the swarm I saw in those photos for the pack at this event. You've been covering the Lakers for a while. As long as you've covered them, does this blow away even everything that you've seen in terms of the amount of just the frenzy over this particular team?
Yeah, this is the craziest. I mean, obviously the main reason is the optimism of the Lakers this season with and the superstar draw that, the whole starting lineup has. But I think you also have to equate the fact that this media day was on Monday. The past two media days that I covered was on a Saturday and a Sunday. So even though there's a lot of storylines coming into each of those seasons with, the Lakers trying to three-peat under Phil Jackson's last year and then everything surrounding the Chris Paul trade and the lack thereof, and then the Lamar Odom deal. The fact that those took place on the weekend, I think, helped to keep the numbers a little bit down. But with this year, I mean, it was just, a madhouse out there with trying to fight for space to get the interviews. And it was just surreal seeing how everyone was swarming one Laker player, and then you realize, hey, there's another superstar about to come out to address the media. And usually, other years, it's pretty much Kobe Bryant. Everyone else is an afterthought. And this year, you have to pay attention to him, Steve Nash, Dwight Howard, and, obviously, Pau Gasol and Meta World Peace are two important figures as well.
Has the attention around Pau been less, and how has he kind of responded to that? Do you think that he likes the fact that it's no longer – he can actually, have a little bit of breathing room, at least when dealing with the media? Or is he kind of – do you think that there could be a point where Gasol is kind of like, hello, best big man in the league for like 3 years, great player, all-star, why does no one care about me? Do you feel like Gasol is going to be able – is he going to like being, kind of thought of as the fourth guy on the team?
Well, what was interesting? There was an amazing play in Thursday's practice where Steve Nash threw the ball quickly at him in midair, and he delivered a touch pass to Dwight Howard, and he threw in for a dunk. Now, obviously, everyone's first instinct is, wow, Dwight Howard's dunking. I mean, this is a clear sign that he's, showing good progress from his back rehab and should be back fairly soon, even though there's not a definitive timetable. But afterwards, everyone from Mike Brown to Kobe Bryant, they are just raving about that touch pass because they think it epitomizes – what's going to be the engine that drives, the elements of this Princeton offense, because it thrives on, ball movement, spacing, cutting, court awareness. And even though, he may be playing second fiddle to Dwight Howard, in terms of post presence, I think that this system, fully taps into his versatility, because last year, he was almost kind of pigeonholed as a facilitator in the high post. And part of that, was because of the absence of Lamar Odom, but part of that was just the product of of the system because they were running plays for Kobe Bryant and Andrew Bynum primarily, and that kind of left Powell as an afterthought. And in theory, with this year's offense, it's really just going to be on what the defense is giving them. And so indirectly, it may actually enhance Powell's involvement with the offense, one, because this taps into his mindset. All the principles that he plays with all fits into the Princeton system, with just making the right pass, reacting to what the defense is giving you, having good floor presence and cutting and spacing. And then secondly, because of the double teams that will probably fall more on Howard and Bryan and Steve Nash, because he's going to be the one running the offense, I think that will open up the floor a little bit more for Powell.
How's, from your perception, how's Mike Brown kind of taken, how's he been with the media this week in terms of dealing with the amount of expectations and pressure and just the hype? I mean, Mike's been around a while, and he's a pretty stable guy. I don't think he's going to get necessarily rattled. There's a lot of criticism of Brown, and some of it's fair, like it is with, I think, any coach. But, one thing I'm not necessarily worried about is Brown necessarily getting caught up in a lot of the, the hoopla. How's he been this week in terms of dealing with the questions about expectations and whatnot?
Oh, he's been fine. I mean, to his credit, I mean, obviously this is a huge test for him because of, he has all the right pieces in place, and this will truly reveal whether, he has what it takes to lead the Lakers to a championship. But I think with him getting thrown in the fire last year with a shortened training camp, having to deal with the aftermath with, the Knicks Chris Paul deal, losing Lamar Odom, and on top of that, trying to win the trust of a fairly experienced and skeptical locker room, I think that he was willing and able to roll through the punches and make the adjustments if need be. But that being said, it doesn't matter how he handles it or how much, of a positive and relentless attitude that he'll have. He'll still maintain that because of just his grinding mentality and all that and his positive attitude. But obviously the test is going to be if he's going to be able to strike that right balance and being able to handle all the superstars on the team while also, kind of maintaining a hands-off approach. And I think the fact that he was willing to shuffle his coaching staff, make changes to his system, I think it suggests that he's open to doing that. But obviously what matters is how it translates into the game. And it really doesn't matter how he handles the media or what his demeanor is. What really matters is, once the game starts, how he handles the lineups and allocates the minutes and handles the practice times and all that. So it's obviously too early to say how that will pan out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's going to be something to keep an eye on. One thing I try and look at, the level kind of beneath the first kind of glossy layer of, oh, look at the stars and the star power. And we get into questions like, this is an older team, obviously, but I think one thing that's actually going to be really beneficial for them is the amount of star power that they have is going to allow them, guys aren't going to have to play through injury. If Meta World Peace gets banged up, he can sit out. They're not going to need him as much, especially against games. If it's a marquee game, it's one thing. But even then, during the regular season, it's a grind and you're just trying to survive. And every player will tell you that. Do you see that that's going to be an advantage where if Bryant's got an injury, I mean, he's probably going to play through it because that's what he does and that's his mental approach.
Right.
But if it's severe enough, he's not going to feel like they're sunk without him. I mean, they played well without him last year, but, Pau Gasol gets banged up. If Steve Nash is back, has a particularly bad episode, or if he has another elbow problem, if these things occur, can you see that being an advantage for the Lakers this year and being able to rest some guys?
I think that's definitely an advantage. And you saw it last year. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Hello?
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying, I think when you look at last year, part of Kobe and a lot of the other players playing so many minutes and all that really attributed to their lack of a bench identity. And I think that that's a larger element coming into play. And, obviously, everything will be headlined by the superstars. But as far as being able to absorb injuries and all that, I think that, the bench play is largely going to predicate that. I mean, you have strong secondary scoring from Antoine Jameson, outside shooting from Jody Meeks, energy from Jordan Hill, somewhat of a, you know, a reliable wing presence with Devin Ebanks. And so on paper, this looks good. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because I think that'll be the largest determining factor whether the Lakers are able to absorb any injuries that come up and, you know, are able to get the low minutes, particularly with Kobe and Nash, that Brown wants them to have, because that was the main reason why Brown was so reluctant in, you know, being hands-off with not giving the burden so much to Kobe. And, you know, on paper, the bench looks good, but, you know, we've seen in years past the bench looking good on paper, and that hasn't always translated. But I think there's a lot of reason for optimism because of all the complementary parts that they're able to get during the offseason.
Yeah, it was really a masterful job by Mitch Kupchak. Mark, before I let you go, one last question. If you got one word to describe this media day and this week in terms of the media availability during this first week of training camp, what would you have it be?
Well, media day was a circus. I think the other days afterwards, I would describe it as businesslike, which I think it's actually a good thing for the Lakers, because they do have all the star power, and, you know, it would be really easy for them to be caught up in the hype and all that, and, you know, boasting about multiple championships like Miami did 2 years ago. But to their credit, I mean, this is a veteran group, and they know the opportunity they have. And, you know, after media day, the size of the media dwindled down, even though there's a fair amount each day. But with that, it's not as much of a circus. And, you know, the things that we're talking about, it is more substantial in terms of just how they're executing the offense and, you know, breaking down the dynamics between, you know, the chemistry and all that. And, you know, with their answers ranging from everyone with Dwight Howard and Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant and Metta World Peace and all that, it's been very businesslike. The mere exception, which actually kind of involves me, was with Metta World Peace this week. He was talking about this NBA flopping rule and how he didn't like it. You know, he thinks the flopping's gotten out of hand, but he doesn't like how there's you know, fines going around, because he thinks the referees should just control it. So he singled me out and used me as a prop to demonstrate that even reporters can avoid, you know, flopping. So he charged at me two times, and luckily I was able to hold my ground and not get a concussion like James Harden did last year.
Yeah, that was an awesome video. Yeah, it was pretty amazing to hear about that. Sam Amick was talking about that. That's Mark Medina of the Los Angeles Times. He does great work. Follow him on Twitter. Make sure to check out his work over there. An incredible reporter. Mark, thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
All right, we'll continue on here with the CBSSports.com basketball podcast in just a minute. So we've talked about ego and we've talked about fit. You know, we've talked about the Princeton offense and the media circus and how Kobe Bryant's going to adapt, and, you know, whether the stars are going to be able to get some rest now with all this extra to firepower. I want to get a sense of how are Lakers fans reacting? You know, what's the sense like in LA and across the country with these Lakers fans that are used to so much success? But even for them, this team has so much star power, so much excitement, so much reason to be thrilled for this season. I mean, they have one of the all-time best point guards in NBA history in Steve Nash, a two-time MVP. They've got Kobe Bryant, one of the all-time best scorers in NBA history, you know, a five-time champion, an MVP in his own right. You got Dwight Howard, who's been an MVP candidate really for the last four seasons, a multiple-time Defensive Player of the Year winner. You know, Pau Gasol is their fourth option. Metta World Peace is their fifth. They've got Antoine Jameson coming off the bench. This team is absurd in the amount of talent that it has. So I wanted to talk to somebody to kind of get a sense of what it's like for Lakers fans, you know, this season and what their expectations are for a team, you know, for a franchise whose fans expect a lot. You know, what are they looking at for this season? How high is the bar? And so I decided to bring in Darius Soriano from ForumBlueAndGold.com. All right, continuing on the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. Joining me right now is Darius Soriano from ForumBlueAndGold.com, the Lakers blog that is really the gold standard, quote unquote, you know, when it comes to Lakers coverage on the web. They do such a fantastic job. I think better than any major outlet does out there. They cover so much.
the, you know, even the game threads. They have some of the best game threads in terms of the commentary. The level of commenters on Forum Blue and Gold, I think, is higher than, you know, really almost any site out there. Harkens back to when True Hoop was independent and you had such a really high basketball discussion. It's a fantastic site. Darius, thanks so much for joining me. Let's start right off with, you know, Kobe Bryant comes out, and I talked to Mark Medina of the LA Times, and he was telling me about kind of, you know, we were talking about how Kobe saying it's his team isn't necessarily a reflection of how it's going to play out on the floor. It's more about leadership and just the identity of the team and him staking his claim because of, you know, him, as he said, he's got five rings. You know, I've been hard on him, and I'm traditionally pretty hard on the guy for a lot of reasons, just because he's a star and he makes it easy. But, you know, is this one where does he have to say that? Like, that was my whole question was, you know, does he really have to make that point? Because he knows if he says it in the public, it's going to be – if he says it to the media, it's going to become a thing. It's going to become a thing. I'm going to blog on it. Like, people like me are going to blog on it. We're all going to talk about it. It becomes a topic of discussion. What do you think was his goal in kind of going that route?
Well, first of all, you know, thanks for having me on, Matt. I really do appreciate it. But speaking to your question, you know, I just think that he was trying to – get it out of the way early and try to just kind of stop the questions about whose team it was, who the leader was going to be on the team. The Lakers have had a lot of change. And in a way, it sort of reminds me of what happened with the Miami Heat, right? Dwayne Wade was the staple player with the Heat. He had a championship resume, and they brought in two excellent players in Chris Bosh and, you know, the best player in the league in LeBron James. And everyone kind of tap danced around whose team it was with Miami. Is it Wade's team? He's the guy with the rings. Is it LeBron's team? LeBron's the best player, and he's the most talented guy, and he's the guy you're probably going to want with the ball, with the game on the line. And so I think when it comes to what Kobe was saying, I think he was probably trying to get it out of the way early and just let everyone know, look, this is my team. I'm the leader. I don't necessarily think it's going to play out like that on the floor in terms of he's going to take the most shots every night, or he's definitely going to lead the team in scoring, even though those may end up being true. I don't think it's necessarily a reflection of this is how it's going to be. I'm the big dog. I'm going to eat first, kind of the way that it's happened in previous seasons, right, with Gasol and Bynum and kind of – who the ball should flow through type of thing. I think it was just more about just setting things up so that it's not going to be a recurring theme throughout the season in terms of a power struggle.
Yeah, I mean, and I can understand that. It's just, you know, it's such a weird kind of foot to start off with. And I think that most of the Lakers, you know, I was also talking to Mark about this, about how, you know, they're laughing it off, and it's all like, oh, ho, you guys make such a big deal out of everything, ah, ha, ha. And, you know, he commented, that's how it is every year. Every year the Lakers kind of come out and they talk about how, oh, you guys make it all this stuff to be so overblown, and yet every year the Lakers are in this hyper-dramatized situation. And some of it may be exaggerated by the market and the franchise itself and just by the media atmosphere, but a lot of it is the dominant personalities involved. This has traditionally been a pretty, you know, drama-filled organization, and it's maybe that's a product of the unparalleled success that they've enjoyed over the last 30 years. You know, covering this team day in and day out, are you ever stunned by the fact that there's always some sort of, like, real super drama going on with the club?
You know, I think early on I was, but over the years I've kind of become numb to it, to tell you the truth. I think that day in and day out, you follow this team and you understand this, while it's not necessarily recycled news because, you know, these stories are new, but it's a recycled feeling. And so you get used to the fact that there's going to be some drama with the team. And I think you're right when you talk about the personalities involved. You know, even before Mike Brown was the head coach and it was Phil Jackson, that was another big name personality and a guy with a huge ego and someone who was not afraid to speak his mind or say something that may end up coming off as controversial. And he would stir the pot as well. And I think that there's a certain amount of good that can come out of a situation not always being so easy. I think that when the path isn't so simple that you can kind of bring the best out of each other. But I do know that there's a line that you probably don't want to cross, but I don't think the Lakers have really even come close to approaching that so far just in the preseason with some of the comments we've heard so far.
Let's talk about what's actually going to be going on the floor, you know, and it's becoming – it's one of the things I think – it's funny watching some of the national writers and the beat writers even kind of covering – not necessarily beat writers. Some of the national guys are a little surprised when they're watching these practices and they see that, oh, wow, Pau Gasol threw a really great pass to Dwight Howard. Oh, wow, Pau Gasol made a really great pass to so-and-so. And it's – I'm kind of like, y'all not been paying attention? Like Bynum got so many looks off of, you know, because when Gasol catches that ball in space, defenders freak out, and rightfully so, because his mid-range abilities are so good that you'll see guys absolutely lunging out of position to try and contest that shot because it's such a high percentage look. But Gasol is smart enough and tall enough to be able to lob that thing up there, and having Howard now, who's probably a better, you know, lob finisher than Bynum was, which is saying something. It's going to be pretty spectacular, and that's one of the things that I've been, you know, watching a lot with in terms of thinking about and watching video of these guys individually over the years. You know, I've joked over the summer about this idea of who's the Bosch, right? So who's the third guy that kind of does the little contributions, the smart plays, who's kind of underrated but is still part of it but isn't as much of a star as the other two. And I can't really find a guy on the Lakers who's going to be in that position to have a really diminished role, because even if Gasol isn't going to be scoring as much, he's going to have so many opportunities when the defense tries to pressure Nash, trap him, go after Kobe, do whatever they have to do. He's going to have so many opportunities, and they can't necessarily play to challenge a shot because he's going to be able to punish them with Howard. Is there a guy on this team that's actually going to have to sacrifice his offensive load outside of maybe Middle World Peace?
Maybe Jameson.
Right?
You know, coming off the bench and having a diminished role. You know, we'll see even how many minutes he's going to get, considering news coming out of Laker camp the last day or so has been that Jordan Hill has been impressing the coaching staff and really kind of making a push early on in camp for minutes and showing the coaches that he's going to deserve to be on the floor. And, you know, I've always said that a three-man big rotation is one thing, but finding minutes for four big men is complicated at times, especially when two of those big men are going to be high-minute guys like Gasol and Howard. You're going to want those guys on the floor a lot. And so finding minutes for all of these guys might be something that is problematic for Mike Brown. But getting back to the offensive load question, I think that one of the things that Kobe's been saying, and obviously this is still on paper and we haven't yet seen it in games, is that these guys really do complement each other well, especially because of Nash's ability to create shots, not only for himself but for his teammates, but Dwight Howard's ability to kind of play from the three-point line and down. Now, you know, explaining that a bit more, you know, he's not going to be out there as a stretch five bombing three-pointers, but he's a heavy pick-and-roll player, and him being able to come out and set screens, you know, 25 feet away from the basket and bring a second defender up above the three-point line, that creates spacing opportunities that just didn't exist last season when Bynum and Gasol shared the floor, because Bynum was really always playing free throw line and down, and that made Gasol always playing a bit higher on the floor, and I think that affected what his game was really like and lowered his efficiency. And so I think what you're going to see this season is just a bit more fluidity in terms of the offensive sets that the Lakers can run just based off of the sheer mobility of the players that are going to be on the floor. And I mean, Gasol's a big part of that. You mentioned his passing and his mid-range shooting ability, but one of the things that I think is going to be very beneficial for him this season is getting back to the post a bit more and getting some shots closer to the basket. The last couple seasons, he's really become a mid-range shooter, but as we saw in the Olympics, he can still be a fantastic force from that left block. He was destroying Kevin Love, who's not necessarily a great defender, but he was giving Tyson Chandler everything that he could handle as well in that gold medal game. And so I think Gasol is really going to kind of remind people of how good he actually is. And I think we're starting to see that already, just like you said, with some of the comments that are coming from national media that are watching these guys practice.
Yeah, and you know, people have been kind of confused because I've been critical of the Lakers before because I'm critical of everyone that has deserving criticism, and that's everyone. But you know, I've been very strong with this team. I've been trying to explain to people, you know, I hear like, well, they're old, or you know, how's the team going to go together, or Kobe's going to take so many shots, and I'm like, look, they have the best pick and roll point guard in the league. They have the best pick-and-roll finisher in the league. They have one of the best off-the-cut shooters in the league. They have one of the best, you know, stretch fours, able to pass, dribble, work in the post, play the stretch, rebound, tap back, and as tall, you know, players in the league. And they still have Meta World Peace, who is and by no means a slouch defensively. You know, if you're looking – and you're a guy, and one of the things I've always appreciated about Forum Blue and Gold is the honest commentary and the way that you guys – you're the opposite of a rah-rah blog. It's very much, and most of the Lakers blogs out there are like that. It's got a lot of intelligent commentary out there, you know. But you guys, especially, you'll look at, okay, what's going to give these guys trouble without being like, oh, they're screwed if this happens. It's more of a, well, these are things that can cause them trouble. So I would ask you, is there a model that you can think of for a team that is going to give this team, you know, fits or trouble or issues just out of talent, not out of a lack of motivation by the Lakers? Outside of maybe the Heat, which is based just off of talent, is there any sort of approach that you can see giving the Lakers issues throughout the season? Because from where I'm at, they've got the versatility and the talent to cover just about anything.
Well, you know, I think that you've still got to look at the Thunder as a team that has a lot of ingredients that can really give the Lakers issues. You know, I know it's a bit cliche to go back and say, well, they're last year's conference champions and they represented the West in the finals and we have to, you know, wait till they're dethroned. I'm not necessarily coming from that standpoint. I'm coming from the standpoint that they're actually really still quite good, really quite young, extremely talented with a diverse group of players that can hurt you in a variety of ways. You know, and when you're looking at the Lakers, I still think that there could be an opportunity for certain positions to give them problems. Point guard defense, I think, is going to be an issue, especially when you're looking at a team like the Thunder, who don't necessarily always attack out of standard pick and roll sets, where you can look at a guy like Howard or sometimes even Gasol to cover up the point guard deficiencies in terms of defense. And so Russell Westbrook's going to attack Steve Nash consistently in isolation. He's going to attack him in transition. He's going to be able to get to the rim. He's going to draw fouls. The whole Thunder team, or at least their big three of Westbrook and Durant and Harden, are all fantastic in terms of drawing fouls. And while the Lakers have an improved bench, their depth isn't necessarily one of their strong suits. You know, we're still talking about a very top-heavy team. And so I think you still have to look at the Thunder model as a group that can really give the Lakers problems on both sides of the ball. Perkins can still defend Howard quite well. Ibaka is still a very good weak side shot blocker to help defend the paint. And teams are still going to crowd the paint against the Lakers to try to make them hit outside shots. Now Nash is going to help a lot with that, but Kobe shot 31% or something like that from 3-point range last year, and Artest or World Peace, you know, he's traditionally been about a 34-35% 3-point shooter, but last year his percentages plummeted from behind the arc. And so teams are still going to really test them in terms of, can you hit the outside shot, because they're still going to try to take the paint away. There are X's and O's counters to that the Lakers can use, but like I said, they're still going to have to go out on the floor and play cohesively as a unit, and we'll still have to see what happens when possessions break down and what kind of turns into their go-to as far as what's our bailout. In years past, that's been let's isolate Kobe, but this year will that change? Will it be let's reset and run a pick and roll with Nash? I mean, it probably should be, but those are still questions that need to be answered, and they'll need to be answered on the floor.
You know, it's interesting. I read a quote from Nash this week. I can't remember exactly where it was, but Nash actually alluded to, you know, those end of possessions, and he said, you know, when the offense kind of breaks down and we're getting low on the shot clock, Kobe's still going to be our go-to guy there. And it was interesting because I think that's going to be something really provocative to watch is the numbers this season for the 82 games tracks it. Now BR Basketball Reference is tracking it as well. You know, those shots inside of a certain amount left on the shot clock, you know, to look at the efficiency of maybe Bryant's possessions or possessions when Bryant's on the floor versus when he's not, and when Nash takes it versus Bryant, because Nash is such an efficient shooter. I think that's going to be really interesting to watch, and we'll continue to revise with the wonderful debates that continue to drive the NBA Twitter world and keep me employed. You know, Darius, this is great stuff, and I kind of want to wrap up by just asking you, as somebody that's covered this team for so long and has seen so many changes and so many different facets and, you know, two world championships and just in the last couple of years, you know, how excited are you about this team specifically? You know, it's Howard's antics kind of color it for a lot, I think a lot of the rest of the NBA's, you know, media and fans, but just in terms of being a Lakers fan, and there's obviously with Lakers fans, there's a high level of expectation and such a high standard. And like the other day, somebody was saying, like, why can't we go get Harden? And I'm just like, my mind is blown. I'm like, you have Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash, Dwight Howard, Pau Gasol. What more do you want?
You wanted to start.
How excited?
You wanted to start typing in all caps, right?
Right, exactly.
Believe me, that stuff drives me crazy as well. I mean, I don't think that there's an all-star player that's ever really played that Lakers fans haven't thought, well, why can't we just go get that guy? I think they'd like an all-star at every position. There was a comment that that was made by Kurt Heelan one time, and I think he said that some Lakers fans wouldn't be happy unless the Lakers win two championships in one season. And so they are a demanding group. It does come from that historical success that the franchise has had. So it's interesting being a Laker fan, but it is exciting at this time. You know, I honestly, I've been excited this much in the past, maybe when they got Shaq. That was a really big deal, you know, but I can tell you that this moved the needle for me in a way that it hasn't in a really long time. You know, just getting Nash was a big deal for me. I thought that positionally, even after the upgrade to Ramon Sessions last season, that point guard has really been the position that has been the weakest for the Lakers over the years, and they've survived through, you know, clutch shot making and moxie of Derek Fisher. And when Kobe was younger and he could take on more of a load from the wing, it didn't matter as much. But the last couple seasons, we've seen that he's really needed that extra bit of perimeter help that hasn't been there. I thought that the loss of Lamar Odom really hurt that as well. By the way, but so getting Nash was huge for me, but to get Howard as well, I thought really put them over the top and gave me a sense that this team really has the chance to be special. And that's not something that I say too often about a Laker group. You know, it's one thing to be in the mix as one of the handful of teams that could really win the championship. And I say this with all sincerity, that I feel fantastic when they are just one of those handful of teams, but to really be at or near the top of that pecking order that exists is just really truly an exciting thing. And just the star power alone is really fascinating to me, but the ability for these guys to mesh and put together a special year is really going to be something to watch, and I can't wait. I've been waiting since July 4th when the Nash signing was announced. So yeah, you know, preseason is here. The season will start in less than a month, and I can't wait.
And I don't think anyone else can either. It's gonna be quite a season, I think, for everybody watching this league and the Lakers in particular. That's Darius Soriano of ForumBlueAndGold.com, an excellent Lakers site. Check him out on Twitter as well. You can find that in our in the podcast above. It's a must read. You need to be reading that site on a daily basis. Not just if you want to find out about the Lakers. If you just want to know about basketball, it's a great site to read every single day. Darius, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Matt.
That'll wrap it up for the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. You can like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at IonBasketball. You can stumble upon our blog pages. You can, I'm sure, Pinterest something in some sort of – I'm not on Pinterest. I don't know. Anyway, you can do all those things. But the biggest thing I would like you to do is to have a great day, enjoy life, enjoy that the preseason is here, and continue to read Ion Basketball and listen to our podcast. Thanks, everybody.